You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. That's me, Dr. Michelle Cohen. And as always, today, I have a fabulous guest who has written the most inspirational, I think, and will also tell you, if you miss a little bit of it, how you can watch it again on our LA Talk Radio Facebook page and also on my page here on latalkradio.com. Today, we're talking about the positive aspects. What? Of COVID-19. I'm speaking with Forrest Rivers. He's the author of a book entitled COVID-19. Right there. Yeah, trying to get that glare off. There it is. Beautiful book. COVID-19, and it's really humanity's spiritual awakening. So we're going to find out what exactly does that mean. I mean, we all know that there were certain aspects to the COVID pandemic that really made people think a lot, whether it's, you know, loving people more, realizing the things that they took advantage of, realizing the gift, should have communicated with that person, all the regrets and guilt, and not only that, but dealing with financial issues, the tragedies, and of course, seeing our loved ones pass away, not to mention our own fear of death, which we're also going to talk about. So welcome to the show, Forrest. Nice to have you here.
It is an absolute pleasure to be on your show today, Michelle. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. I loved your book. What an uplifting read. And, you know, it's not only a nice breezy read. I mean, I read it in one night. I loved it. But it really covers a lot of aspects of sort of, and I don't want to say spiritual, but it is. It's like, let's look at some of the things that this COVID-19 pandemic has opened up to the world and also personally has helped us. But then again, you know, in history, how these, you know, things ebb and flow, you know, so we can check out some of that stuff. And like you say many times, it's an important opportunity to work with suffering. And it has great potential to spiritually awaken all of humanity. So it really has. We're not by any means negating it.
No. This has been, you said it perfectly, Michelle. This has been, you know, a terrible time of suffering for many, many, many people. And there's no mitigating that. There's no downplaying that. However, if we flip the script just a little bit here, this is a tremendous opportunity, important opportunity to use this for our own spiritual awakening in many of the ways that you've already played in that wonderful opportunity to come to terms with our fear of death. It's been a wonderful opportunity to kind of like reexamine what really matters in our lives. Are we doing the careers that we want to? Are we living... are we living in a sustainable manner with the earth? Are we allowing our creativity in our life to flow?
Right.
You know, this has been such a monumental event.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, it's these monumental events that serve to awaken humanity.
Yes, absolutely.
There's a beautiful quote in the book I have from one of my most influential spiritual teachers, and that is Ram Dass, the late Ram Dass.
Love him.
Yeah, I love him. amazing. And he said the quote, "Suffering is the sandpaper of our awakening." Beautiful. You know, and that's kind of the main message of this book.
Yes, exactly. That's beautiful. And I would like you to, if you don't mind, share a little bit about your journey. I know that you had this amazing, awe-inspiring trip to Hawaii, my favorite island, Maui. And that's sort of when you began your spiritual journey. So can you talk a little bit about your, as you call it, awakening?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I would love to, Michelle. So for me, nature, getting out in the outdoor world has been my deepest spiritual practice. You know, aside from meditation practice, aside from service, the for me, it's always been that connection with the earth.
Mm. Yes.
And I had the blessed opportunity to end up in Maui almost 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there where spending time with nature,
yes,
I started becoming just completely aware of our interconnectedness to everything. Mm-hmm. That we're all one. We're all connected. We're all intrinsically tied together in this beautiful, vast cosmic web. So when I was there, I had several moving experiences. And I actually described the awakening itself in my first book, The Hippie Revival and Collected Writings.
Love it.
And yeah. And it was just there where, I don't know, it just hit me how connected we all are, how connected we are to the earth. Everything has consciousness. Thinking of, our relationship to the divine, there's no divine here and then us here. It's all right. Intermingled. Everything
yes.
is living and breathing with that consciousness. And that's what it felt like to me when I was in Maui, and that's how the nature spoke to me. So
yes.
it was an incredible awakening. I came home from that trip by the transcendent beauty of that island, as you obviously know too,
yes.
Michelle. I mean, it's on another level with
it is.
A beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home and just decided to immerse myself deeper into spiritual practices and dove into meditation practice and had a had a beautiful first teacher who I talk about in the book. Experienced that, deepened my relationship even more with nature. Eventually, I moved away to the mountains.
Nice.
And in the last couple, the last 5-6 years of my life, I've been kind of moving back and forth between the Rocky Mountains in Colorado and the Smoky Mountains in North Carolina, where I presently am. And
yes.
and that's just awoken something in me that I really just can't, I'm not even really describing that well. It's just a
awesome.
Transcendent feeling of knowing, really. And it's been a wonderful journey, but it's also, it's been,
sure.
It's a journey. There's peaks and valleys sure. in that journey.
Right. Well, of course, I think there always are, when you're especially open to learning and, we learn as you said, but we become more, conscious or whatever, we learn the bittersweetness of the pain and the lessons that, come with that a lot of times.
So, yeah. And the Maui adventure followed a period of suffering, of great suffering. I had struggled with alcohol abuse mm-hmm. for a while. And that event kind of jolted me out of that. It healed me, Michelle. It healed me. And so as I went on my sort of journey,
mm-hmm.
actually, I think we're always on the journey. We're just not always aware
right.
that life is a spiritual journey. So when I became aware of that,
yes.
I started kind of writing to help inspire others to get out of their own pits of despair, the dark of themselves. And that's why I
beautiful.
Write.
Oh, that's beautiful. By the way, I want to mention too that you're, you've taught over a decade. You're as a college professor, and you spend a great deal of your time guiding others to look within. And of course, like we're going to be talking about today, how they can become the best versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I hear you want to start a wilderness retreat center and helping others, and mm-hmm. giving your teachings and services. So that's a great idea.
It would be a dream of mine, Michelle. And I intend one day to make that a reality, but I want to make it a retreat center that can be accessed by everybody regardless of wealth or
yes, exactly.
income. And that can be sometimes the issue with like that retreat scene sometimes.
Right.
I want to make sure that that's accessible, but
sure.
that would be my dream.
And
dream.
you are a master manifester now. You know that, right? And you know how to do that. So, hey, it will be. So be it. And
it will be.
It's all unfolding. How's that?
you are what you believe.
Yes.
You manifest your reality.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So can you describe a little bit more when you talk about spiritual awakening for all of us? What do you mean exactly when you use that word in terms of, you know, not only without COVID, pre-COVID, but, you know, during COVID now?
That's a wonderful question, Michelle. So spiritual awakening, I sort of mean two things by that. One, a growing awareness of our interconnectedness to each other.
Right.
That we are tied not only to other humans, but we are tied to other animals and
yes.
plants
yes.
and the earth. And then beyond that, the the solar system and the galaxies and the universe, that we're all interconnected and tied. So when I talk about spiritual awakening, that's the first thing I mean by it.
Yes.
And if you want to say that interconnectedness, you can use any term for that. Our inherent unity with the one.
Right.
With many names, God,
right.
Buddha,
right.
Christ consciousness, Brahman, whatever term you're comfortable using, that awareness that we're all tied together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Making up that.
Yes.
And then when I say spiritual awakening, at least the way I use it in the book, I also mean more of like a personal sense too. So there's the transcendent.
Right.
The connection to the interconnectedness, the right, totality. Right. And then there's the personal or the imminent, you know, and that is becoming the best versions of ourselves.
Right.
So then we rise to that level of awareness mm-hmm. that we can feel our connection to everything.
Boy, is that good. Yes.
I think COVID has presented the opportunity, a very unique opportunity, Michelle, to fulfill both aspects of that spiritual awakening, the imminent personal self-growth side of it, and then also right. the transcendent interconnectedness yeah. to the greater whole.
Yes, yes. I find that a lot of students who I talk with and some of the groups who I meet with, you know, who are kind of getting in touch with that at, well, we call it quantum consciousness groups. you know, they're having a little bit of a hard time with their ego sort of dipping in. And I think that's, you know, part of the human experience, because we're 3D here. We have this, we're in the linear field, you know, so we have this body and we have these feelings and we have this, all of this stuff, pain and the lessons we need to go through. But it's hard to get that ego need sort of separated sometimes from that connection to one and all, you know, because of, you know, we all have issues. We all have unresolved stuff from a psychologist's point of view. We have pain and resentments and, you know, we just need to, sometimes that ego needs to prove that we're better than others due to whatever issues, you know. So what are some of the ideas that you might give to people to make that understanding and transition? Not to be, because we can't become holy, you know, in that dimension, but I mean, to make that sort of cut that ego away a little bit more from being open to consciousness of others.
Oh man, that's a fantastic question. I think one thing that we can all do is find opportunities in our lives to humble ourselves.
Yeah.
And I don't mean literally like, oh, I was great. Let me pat myself on the back. That's still too much ego. That's still ego manifesting.
Right. Yeah.
What I mean is like deliberately putting ourselves in situations where that false barrier or illusion between us and them naturally breaks down. And, you know, for me, for example, it's climbing a mountain. Something as simple as climbing a mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you think that you're greater than anything else
right.
when you're climbing a mountain and you're at that and you're winded and you're out of breath And doubt is just kicking your butt. You see, you see how infinitely small you are for every, to compare to everything.
Yeah.
One thing I would do is, I think the more time you spend in nature,
yeah,
which COVID, by the way, forced a lot of people, as we all know,
yeah,
into nature. I mean, you had a choice.
Yeah.
I could stay inside my home during the lockdowns.
Right.
Or right. I can venture back out into the parks, into nature. And
mm-hmm. exactly.
Spending time in nature, whether it's swimming, hiking, gardening,
mm-hmm.
Yes. It doesn't matter what it is. It'll humble you. Nature right. will humble you.
Right, right.
So I recommend to all the viewers here today and listeners, cultivate a relationship with the earth,
right.
with Mother Nature.
Right.
That's one way to kind of like start breaking down that ego.
Yes.
Another thing is a meditation practice. Mm-hmm, I am a mm-hmm. huge proponent of meditation practice. I had known about it even before my trip to Maui.
Mm-hmm.
My mom has been practicing meditation for years. And I remember her talking nice. About it when I was a child.
Aw,
and I always kind of wrote it off, Michelle, like, oh, come on. That's just like, when I was younger, I was like, that's just kind of a bunch of mumbo jumbo. And then I really yeah. started, when I was ready, opening myself up to the practice.
Yes.
And it is a seminal practice.
Yes.
Not only is it a beautiful form to cultivate a relationship with the divine,
mm-hmm. yes,
but you can't even begin to move past your own ego until you're able to quiet your mind,
right?
You know, and yes. it's interesting yes. that every single Buddha, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Whether we're talking about the Upanishads, you know, everything is goes back to quieting the mind first,
mm.
and then you wait for grace. You
right.
know, and you
right.
can't even begin to do that until. And look how much we're inundated with in our day to day lives today. The need to quiet our minds is more important than it ever has been before, in my humble opinion. So.
Right.
I would say yes. nature and meditation.
Oh, I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah. Are
beautiful.
Are incredible techniques.
Beautifully said. And listeners, to that point of, you know, nature, discovering nature and getting out. And I suggest you also not only pick up Forest River's book. There it is. I have these lights. There you go. Beautiful. And it's COVID-19 and humanity's spiritual awakening. And this is in no way, you know, lessening the impact of how the suffering has affected the whole world. And sadly, you know, many of our relatives and loved ones have passed from it. But this is a sort of another way to look at some of the lessons that we've learned out of this pandemic. And it's still going on. It is still, this is not, woohoo, let's throw off our masks, everybody's vaccinated and party. I'm still really urging a lot of people to be cautious. Yes, things are opening up at least a little bit more in this state out here in Cali because, you know, we have decent numbers. And I know slowly other states are opening up as well, which is wonderful. And, but anyway, back to my point there. If you look, you know, at the studies on what's called earthing, you know, a lot of people, that is a science and it is getting out of nature and it has to do with connecting to Mother Earth, you know, Gaia and how just taking time every day out of your day, whatever temperature it is outside, whatever, cover yourself, but you can connect with the earth and really it does help with health problems and it helps. It relaxes you. It helps with anxiety and depression. So many things. Look at the studies. There's a great little documentary on as well called Earthing. So check that out, you know, as well.
I was going to say, Michelle, a wonderful, just an aside to what you just said.
Yes.
Like, it's like any other relationship. You have to put time into it though, to
yes.
develop it with nature. You have to, just like you would take time to spend with your children or just
yes.
like you would take time to spend with your spouse or just like
yes.
you might take time
yes.
to cultivate a daily meditation practice. you need to make that a part of your day-to-day life. It becomes, yes, it becomes something you at first it feels like, okay, I'm prioritizing this amount of time to be out in nature. Right. And then before you know it, Michelle, you'll be craving to be out there every day. It becomes a way of life.
Right. I agree. It's really true. And also on your point of meditation, what type of meditation do you do? I mean, if you could, I mean, a lot of people do their own thing and have their own ways that they really prefer.
But. Yeah, I just want to say to everybody first, to all the listeners and viewers, there is no wrong or right way to meditate. And any teacher who tries to tell you that their way is the only way, there's that spiritual ego manifesting. There are techniques, multiple techniques of meditation to try. And what works for me may not work for you. What works for you may not work for me. So that's a very important point I want to get out there.
Okay.
But with that being said, a couple techniques that I love mantra meditation a lot.
Yes.
Mantras help a lot. Mm-hmm. It's just the repetition of a sacred phrase or empowering phrase that helps simultaneously quiet your mind and instill movement in your heart.
Oh, lovely. Oh, that's lovely.
And you know, there's plenty of, mantras you can do. There's Hindu mantras. There's Christ-centered mantras. There are non-religious mantras you can try. So I highly recommend mantras. It's an instant way. It's especially for first time meditators.
Right.
To quiet mind.
Right. Exactly.
Loving kindness meditations is another kind. In the Theravadan Buddhist tradition, they call it metta practice. And that's essentially where you're just sending out feelings of goodwill. It's part visualization exercise. You picture, essentially in a nutshell, you picture breathing into your heart the feelings of love and kindness. So you picture like a pink, it could be a pink light, a clear white light, something you associate with kindness, love, and you send it in on the in-breath into your heart.
Yes.
And on the out-breath, you send that light out to somebody you know who needs the healing. It could be somebody who's sick.
Yes.
It could be somebody who's, to the point where not only are you sending it to individuals, you're sending that light out to the entire planet, you know?
Right. It affects everyone,
And there's, by the way, there's studies, Michelle, that back that up. There were some studies back in the 80s where there were gatherings of people during the wars in Israel and Lebanon. And there'd be groups that would gather. They'd focus their energy on sending goodwill. And guess what? Every time they did that, there was a ceasefire.
Oh, that's amazing.
Amazing.
And they've done those experiments all over. You know, they did a huge one in Washington back, I believe it was in the 90s with, you know, and all they say supposedly is if 1% of the population is doing that meditation and bringing that out, the power of the thought, the energy. And it's, you know, and we're always in that high beta, you know, going on, of gotta do's, and that's the, and it's not bad. Again, we're humans. We have to take care of business. We have a lot on our minds and families, perhaps, and we're loved ones, elders, we take care of that kind of thing. But, you know, the whole, as you said, the whole idea is just to calm that mind and slow down to a different brainwave, you know, maybe an alpha, if you can get into a theta, a nice mellow, you know, and just get your brain still for a little bit. And, on your point, go ahead.
So I was going to say, Michelle, even like 10 minutes of that state, that alpha state you're talking about. I mean, we're not even talking 30, 40, 50 minutes.
Right.
10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, even 5 minutes has a tremendous impact. I've done meditations with faculty and students where I'll be with them. And after 5 minutes, I have them, come back to the normal state of consciousness.
Right.
And the entire classroom is literally transformed night and day from what it was. People are focused. People are calm. There's less anxiety in the room.
Right.
That's 5 minutes.
Yes, so, exactly. Yeah,
and to your point, Michelle, 1%, can you imagine one, all it takes is 1% of the world's population to literally alter the vibrations of conflict and strife. Can you imagine if we had 10% of the population who were tuned into that? What kind of change would we see in the world?
Exactly. And your book speaks to that. Again, COVID-19 with my special guest, Forest Rivers, and humanity's spiritual awakening. I mean, there really are some amazing, deeply enlightening things that we have and need to sort of take away from this pandemic. And I think this is, again, we're not negating the horrific pandemic and how it's affected other people and their lives and us all for that matter and our own fears, which I want to address in just a little bit as well. So, you know, I think you're so right about meditating. And of course you mentioned bringing in the heart, you know, if you want to send out love and, you know, the Heart Math Institute in Palo Alto's, you know, done hundreds and hundreds of studies on the power of the emotion and, you know, the sensory neurites we have around our heart and how they connect with the mind. And it's just sending those, just focusing on that and sending it out to envisioning someone we love, just the face of that person or the energy of a family who we love standing together and just meditating or thinking about them and just sending them love. You know, that's going everywhere. It's also coming back to us, by the way. Boom. So if we're thinking negatively, it's boom, boom, right back at you. But, you know, if there's a positive energy that we're thinking out there.
And ironically, Michelle, the more you end up sending out positive vibes and you know, to others, the more it comes back to you. It makes you a more positive person. So you actually benefit by being selfless with your love.
Right. Exactly. And that makes so much sense. Beautifully said, Forrest. You know, we were just touching on some of the things that we've all been through, you know, our loved ones and who've passed from COVID and the horrible stories and news reports we've seen for the past year and our own fear, you know, of, oh my gosh, what if I catch this? Am I going to die? It hurt all of us. Some people, you know, who have been associated with certain political factions, which I don't know if it's a political thing. I don't even want to go there. But, you know, some people say, it's no big deal. If I get it, I'll be fine. It's like a flu. But in reality, with what some of the medical professionals are saying, go anywhere, look at the real medical reports, WebMD, all of the biological reports of this new strain. We can all die from it. And we're having to face our own mortality. So how do you help people understand how they can overcome this fear of not catching COVID, but understand the fear of their own death or passing?
So that's,
it's heavy. I know it's a heavy,
it's heavy, Michelle, but it's literally perhaps the most important question and the most important question and topic in any kind of spiritual work.
Yeah.
And that is overcoming our fear of death. And certainly COVID has been a major lesson in coming to terms with our fear of death, whether, like you said, our own fear of dying from COVID or seeing our relatives tragically die from it, or, you know, even the metaphorical death.
Yes.
Of what will I be like if I get it and then survive? Will I, you know, what will that do to my psyche? I mean, there's reports coming out of people who have had it and now they're faced with serious mental health issues.
Oh yes.
It's only like, and you know, and when we see all that, it's like, well, how do we, number one, so one way that we can really work with this and it's going to sound incredibly simplistic, but it's powerful in these words, is learning to be present with what is. I mean, when you, I think a lot of our fear of death, particularly in COVID, is letting our minds wander. Many times when we're faced with death, our mind, our ego, immediately starts projecting its own worst fears.
Yeah.
So for example, what does that mean if my relative dies? What does that mean? Are they done? Is there more? Where do I go when I die? What's that mean? You know, because we're so closed down in our society, at least in American culture, we're so, what's the word I'm looking for? We're so scared.
Yes, about, yes.
Yeah. You know, we almost try to like create this whole mirage about what death is.
Right.
And I think number one way to, what I tell people is we need to be present with what is.
Yes.
You know, I think practicing acceptance, it doesn't mean that we don't mourn the death of our loved ones. And it certainly doesn't mean that we hold on to this fake bravado, like, oh, I'm not afraid of death. You know, I think facing our fears head on and being present with what is.
Right.
Death is here. This is a fact of life right now in COVID. It's here. It's more present in our faces than it's ever been. And here it is. Now what? Two things we can do with that. We can run from that and continue to reproduce those vibrations of fear.
Exactly. Yes.
Use it and examine what does death actually mean? You know, we can use it as a point of contemplation. So I'd say number one is not, the Buddha talked about this, right? Very basic stuff. Our suffering is created when we have an aversion to something, when we become overly attached to a concept.
Right.
So if we're able to, instead of running from what's in front of us, meet it head on, no matter how painful. Again, I'll quote him again. Ram Dass had said before he passed, one of the major challenges with death is keeping your heart, is learning to keep your heart open in hell. But if you can do that, if you can learn to keep your heart open in hell, there's a lot of work that can be done there. So I'd say number one, being present.
Yeah.
And number two is the more time you spend in nature, and the more time you spend in meditation, I mean, real deep introspective meditation, not 30 seconds here or 45 seconds here. I mean, real intense establishing a meditation practice, daily practice. Eventually you'll come to the idea on your own intuitively within you that death, and again, I'm not minimizing people's, you know, trying to underplay people's suffering. Death is very real. I mean, I it's very real, and it can be horribly tragic and probably the most painful experience, not probably is the most painful experience any of us will face, particularly when it's a loved one or if we find out we're going to die. I mean, but the more you spend in your cultivating a meditation practice, and the more time you spend in nature, the more you start to reorient your perspective of death. And what do I mean by that? You start to realize that death is part of the natural cycle and way of things. It's not something to be feared. It's not a mistake. It's not an error, right? It's something as natural as being birthed. Mm-hmm. It's something as natural as growing old. It's part of a natural cycle. And to connect this to nature, when you spend a lot of time with the earth, you start to notice its cycles, the passing of the seasons.
Right.
The tree dies and decomposes. But does it really die?
Right.
No, it's continuing to give life, flourishing new life. And I think that the more you deepen your spiritual practice, the more you reorient your relationship with death. It's See, in our society, Michelle, we look at death as something that's like kind of like a foe needs to be conquered. And if we can't conquer it, we bury it deep down. I'm sure you've talked about this with your own patients.
We
bury it deep down into our subconscious.
Right.
But what spiritual practice invites us to do is to be open with it and to say, okay, you're not my foe. You're more my uncomfortable companion that I have to learn to become a little bit more comfortable with.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, it's true. It's really true. No, exactly. And you know, what did Freud say? I disagree with a lot of his, you know, old school patriarch, you know, beliefs, but I mean, you know, really, conceptualize others passing, but there is no way we are a complete denial about our own passing. We submerge that, and the reality of it is incomprehensible to us. So we don't even, we just negate it. And it's not like embrace your own death. I was just stating this is how we perceive it. But I believe if you really are, you know, a lot of my guests, as you probably know, have been part of that other documentary many people can check out too. I think it's on Netflix, is Surviving Death. It, you know, again, it's not this woo-woo thing. It's very scientifically oriented. The only part for me is that I have a little hesitancy towards the mediums, as they call themselves. You know, there's some real people who have freaked me out personally, who've told me no one else knows about those others who've passed before us, who we know and what their messages are. So those are heavy. But not only that, but with Michelle, the meditations, the information. Yeah.
Yeah, Michelle, I was going to say to that, one thing that a lot of people can do now to actively overcome their fear of death, and that idea that you're talking about, of especially their own, is to immerse themselves in literature too, in addition to meditation, in addition to getting out in nature, immerse themselves in literature that has that perspective you're talking about, Michelle, where when you,
so
for example, in the Hindu faith, right, they literally have a very light way of talking about death. Mm-hmm. In the faith, they call it dropping the body.
Right.
That suggests that what all the body really is a physical vessel. You got to take care of it. You got to, you know, protect it, because it's the vessel that allows you to do your spiritual work.
Right.
But it's housing the real you inside. So that means that when the body dies, that's it. The body dies. The soul, or the essence, or the self, or the kernel of eternal wisdom, whatever you want to call it.
Right. Yeah.
It continues on. And I think the more, like I, in my case, the more I've immersed myself in that literature, the more I don't believe anymore that the soul continues on. I feel like I know. And people will say, well, how do you know? And how can you really know? And I'm like, well, you know, it's one of those things that I feel in here. And I admit that it might be subjective, but who have literally recalled past lives.
Right.
And said that this is just how it is. Your soul continues on. You know, you go to other planes of consciousness and dimensions.
Yes.
And then you retake birth in human form, or
and it's so true.
And I think the more time you spend with that, it's like, oh wow, like, you know, not only does that mean that every life is incredibly important because it builds on the next one, but it also means that there's nothing to really fear when I die. It's just a continuation. My point is, you don't die. You don't die. Who you think you are dies, the body, the ego, mind, in this particular incarnation. But who you really are, supported by science.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
energy can neither be created or destroyed. Right. It's that kernel of the, the Hindus call it again, the deathless self.
Wow. Yes. That's beautiful. You know, and every religion has certain beliefs about the afterlife as well, which is really wonderful. It's all, you know, their interpretation, which are all valid, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I've had a lot of quantum consciousness, physics, actual people who are, you know, physics, brilliant physics geniuses on the show. And they talk about, you know, that from a scientific point of view, mm-hmm. how that energy, you know, will continue to exist. And not to mention, I was really recently talking about and binging on Dolores Cannon and her, she has some amazing chats. She has deceased. She was an elderly woman who'd been practicing hypnosis on people for 40 years. And she recorded so many of her sessions where all of a sudden she got people so deep, they started speaking different languages, telling her that they were other people, that they lived in certain areas, that they'd start all of a sudden speaking Hebrew and talking about their lives in, you know, in Israel. They did, you know, all over the world, people were who she wrote 20 books about from her recordings. There's something to that. And this can't be people making stuff up.
My own mom, this is just something that listeners and viewers may find interesting.
Yes.
My own mother.
Yeah.
She has been a practicing hypnotist for about 25 years, and she's led several people through past life regressions.
Yes.
She'll tape it with their permission, of course, and she'll be recording. And some of the people who come out can't believe what they're recalling, what languages they were speaking, what they were recalling from their past lives, the phobias that they had that were revealed.
Yes.
It's legitimately backed by
by
scientific observation. So
not to mention the kids who've come out, you know, all of the children, that institute, I believe it's in West Virginia, the Institute of studying, you know, various types of life, past life phenomenon. The children between ages 3 and I believe 7 who've come out and described who they were, you know, in past lives. And they have some that are not too legit. They could have watched TV or heard from other, but there are such vivid memories and descriptions that these little people wouldn't know. The brain changes at 7, you know, there's a new thing. So that's when these memories start to fade slowly. For some, it has not, but all over the world, you know, there's so many children who talk of who they were. And some of the famous cases, if you also, you can Google that, folks, of the documented cases that people who did exist and their names and how they died and how these, you know, children between 3, usually 3 and 7, that's when they can really start clearly, you know, talking at 3 about who they were, and they're insisting. And some of their parents say, you know, oh, you, it's okay, it's your imaginary friend, or you know. But some parents embraced it and brought these children to the university out in and the study institute out in West Virginia, and there really are, you know, finding their some of these are amazing. Some of the information that they're getting. So there's something, as you and I are talking, there's so many things that point towards. There's got to be something to this. There really is something to this.
Yeah, so I think immersing ourselves, which that's completely fascinating, Michelle. By the way, everything you just said about that, it just confirms everything that I've always had, and it brings me to my last point. You know, what can people do with death?
Yes,
learning to be more present, right?
Yes,
establishing a meditation practice, getting out in nature. I know I keep saying those two things: meditation and nature. Keep hammering those two things home. But also, like, once you develop a consistent spiritual practice, you can't help but find a deeper reservoir of inner faith.
Yes.
And once you develop that faith, you start to kind of like just know things, not in the ego, I know and I'm superior to you.
Yeah.
More like it's a quiet knowing. I don't, like, very rarely will I share with anybody my perspectives. We're having a very open dialogue about this.
Yeah. But
you know, it's something that I just take to be, of course, that's just a natural, that's just a truth in this universe, that our form goes away and the formless, deathless self continues on. I don't even think that's a contested point. You know, I think that comes, though, important point, it comes from inner faith.
Yes.
Not belief, but faith. And that's something I talk a lot about in the book, mm-hmm. is the difference between belief and faith.
Yes.
And I think those who cultivate faith during these times,
yes,
are going to really use this period for growth.
Yes.
Clinging to belief, on the other hand, which is different from faith, gets us into trouble.
Yes, exactly. Well said. And we're just about out of time here. It's been really, time has gone so fast interviewing you. You have such great ideas, and you're such an inspiration to everybody, Forrest. Thank you so much.
No, Michelle, your show is an inspiration to everybody.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being. Let me hold this book up again. Here we are.
And if I could say one last thing, too.
Yeah.
One last couple of seconds here. If you go, you can find the book on Amazon.
Right.
And you can also find the book on through Conscious Living Media, which is my independent publisher. And if you go onto Amazon and you buy the book and you leave a review,
lovely.
You can write me at ForrestRivers4.
Beautiful.
At gmail.com, and I
Perfect.
Will send you, if you provide me with an address, a free copy of my first book. So
it's great.
You will get a free copy of The Hippie Revival. You go on to and buy the book and then write me at forestrivers4@gmail.com, and I will go ahead and send you a free copy of The Hippie
Revival. Beautiful. Oh, I love that. Also, everybody can get the book on BarnesandNoble.com.
Yep.
And, of course, on your website, ForrestRivers.com, F-O-R-R-E-S-T, Rivers.com. And you can find out more about Forrest as well and his teachings. And also pick up his book. Again, this is it. It's COVID-19 and Humanity's Spiritual Awakening. The positives and the things that we can learn from this pandemic. They're in here and they're very inspirational. So thank you so much for being on the show today. I sure appreciate it, Forrest.
Michelle, I'm grateful for this hour we spent.
Yeah, well, you're awesome, and I loved reading your book. So take good care, and thanks for being such a wonderful teacher to everyone.
No, thank you for everything you do, and much peace to everybody.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks for being here on the couch. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and we'll be back next week with more of On the Couch inspirational information for you. And you know, we're going to explore how to make yourself even feel better going through what we're going through and how to cope with some of the changes now that COVID seems to be calming down a little bit. There's a lot of people out there who are a little concerned about getting back to normalcy again, what that's going to be like. So thanks again for watching. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. Thanks for joining. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.